You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but spoken by people who get it. People who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today I'm excited to dive into a conversation about ministry transition. And broadly speaking, this is going to cover all the situations where, whether it's you or whether it's a lead pastor or whether it's a different staff member, but we're just kind of generally talking about the messiness that happens when pastors leave. Because obviously, we've probably all seen it done well, but there are times where it's done pretty wrong. And so we have to kind of dive into this. I'm excited because today our guest, Pastor Bill Lannis, is very passionate about this. His life story and journey has kind of lent towards these conversations, and I'm just pumped to dive in and pull the lessons out that we can pull out. So the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Bill, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe. It's great to talk with you today.
Good. Well, we're happy to have you. Sometimes with the guests, you know, there's no prior relationship, but Pastor Bill actually serves in Montana alongside myself in our great state. And so it's just really cool to have someone who's even closer in proximity as a friend. And so, Bill, I'm just pumped to dive into your story. So the first thing we're going to do is just ask you a simple question. Can you talk to us about your journey in ministry and your connection to kind of the rural church and what that's looked like? And so maybe you got saved at a young age, maybe you started Bible college, but pick a point and get us to present day, man. And what's your life been like?
Sure, Joe. My ministry calling dates back to the very early years of my life. Thankfully, I was raised by some quality parents who loved the church. My father was a church board member. He was a Royal Ranger leader. My mom was also involved in administrative areas. So they were very involved. And so nice. I grew up cutting my teeth on the back of pews and just really enjoyed that. And one thing that our family did a lot, especially my mom and us as kids, we spent most summers for multiple weeks at Glacier Bible Camp, place dear to you as well.
Yeah, we do love that. Yep.
And growing up in that environment is where I believe the Lord called me into ministry from a very early age, probably even before the age of 10, just spending time there. Really was impactful in my life. And then kind of had an interesting twist in the mid 1980s. My father, as a dedicated church member, he was an electrician by professional trade. He then decided to follow God's call in his life to pursue pastoral ministry in his 40s. And I actually loved that idea. I love that. I remember when we made that change, I was very excited. So our family moved to Ellendale, North Dakota, and both he and my mother attended Trinity, and was there. I was in high school. Some of our connections really are interesting, how they dovetail together. That's where Dwight and Nadine Sandoz were at Trinity, and then they were my youth pastors, and were major key influencers in my life as a teenager, and I loved that incredibly. And then upon Bible college, I was in Eastern Montana some and Western Montana during the time my wife and I got married, starting in youth ministry, and really that was part of our journey. And I did have a biblical studies degree with pastoral minor. And so I started off for about 16 to 17 years as a youth pastor and as associate. And that's when I made some transitions later. But all that to say that there was three major key influencers in my life, and that included my parents, Paul and Anita Wheeler, and Dwight and Nadine Sandoz, and they really helped shape my love for ministry.
Yeah, and can you just give us a brief flyover? When you say 17 years in youth ministry, can you just give us the dates and times you found yourself? Like, what, you know, were you in small places, big places? Where'd you serve at during those times?
Well, definitely, you, as you know, Montana is totally rural.
That's true.
I was, you know, I'm a Western Montana kid. And so when I came across the border, I made it 5 or 7 miles to Baker, but really loved it. And that was, you know, that place well. It was a very rural context, 80 miles to Mile City. That was the bigger city. And so that's where some of that time was. During Bible college, I spent some time in Western Nebraska with the Sandoz, kind of extended my Bible college education by some practical time in ministry between my sophomore and junior year. So it's always been rural. When we went to Western Montana, went to a larger church in Libby, and to me, that felt big. 300 people was very large.
Yeah, and Libby as a town is still like, what, 5,000? I mean, 6,000. Yeah, it's not a huge place.
No. But we call it the city.
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure. And then you currently serve in Whitehall, Montana. Again, another kind of smaller community situated between some of our bigger ones. But how long have you been the lead pastor in Whitehall?
Since 2008. So going quite a few years. It's been a great journey. Whitehall's a really unique place. It's right on the interstate. It's very transitionary community. Whitehall has one other thing, and maybe rural pastors would get this or not. I think it's kind of unique, but we have anywhere from 10 to 12 churches in a small community of 800 in town and about 3,000 in the surrounding area. So it's unique.
Yeah, no, I feel that. We used to count in Baker how many bars and churches there were and see if they could ever overtake one another. But no, that's a great story. So you're talking, I mean, in terms of full-time pastoral ministry, since you started a ministry to now, I mean, if I'm counting right, it's about 34 years, or is it longer than that?
Yeah, right around that. Yeah, I started very early on. I think the Sandoz really installed that into me. Mm. Of course, my parents did, and so I just didn't run away to Bible college. I started doing ministry things during Bible college.
Yeah. And
loved that. Had a great opportunity, Trinity, to do that in that community as well, and join with other students in youth ministry. So, but I didn't plan on being I was more of a long-term youth pastor, but I wanted to have experience working under a pastor and doing associate type things for years before I jumped into that role.
Absolutely, man. Well, that is so fun. 34 years. I love tapping into people who have all sorts of wisdom through just life lived and ministry experienced. And so let's start here then. Over that time, over 34 years, you have experienced, obviously, ministry transition, probably the good, the bad, and the ugly, as we're going to get into. And so we're talking primarily today about that topic, about how to walk through what happens when pastors leave or when you leave. You know, how do we navigate these situations? But what I was so intrigued by when we started this conversation was how passionate you were about it. You know, it seems like because everyone has subjects they care about, but you were really like, no, this is a big theme in my life. This is something I've walked through. This is something I want to teach others. And so where did that passion come from? Talk to us about the parts of your journey and your story where that kind of came out.
Well, I think some of the subject matter I'd like to cover is, I'd call it maybe more like church casualties. The truth is, ministry wounds seem to be very prevalent. If you've been in some level of ministry for a short period of time, hurt, offense, turmoil, they are so common. For those of us who have been in ministry for the long haul, the opportunities for hardship, they can hit at waves at times, almost like a barrage or an onslaught, and it can be pretty difficult to deal with. And so I think that this conversation, it should include certainly every pew sitter or local church servant who has dedicated much of their life and efforts to the cause of Christ. And so I say that our stories as church leaders and church members, I would describe them as they could be somewhat reminiscent of a battlefield. I use like the imagery of Hacksaw Ridge, where it includes all these with major physical and emotional trauma, and it creates paralysis and anxiety and so many different things, loss. And so I think that it's ironic because Jesus established the church to be an ER for hurting souls and redeeming people and changing the world. But what in the world do we do when the mission is compromised and there's all these casualties and the local church turns into a smoldering battlefield? And I've seen some great transitions, been part of those, and thankful for those. There's a couple in particular that were quite challenging. So ministry transition can be smooth, and other times it can be downright rocky and treacherous. So I wanted to talk with you three different particular transitions that were deep and personal and impacted my life. And it did create some trauma, to be honest. Looking back over the years, I can see how each of those transitions, they were almost like preparation for the next. And familiar with terms in counseling fields, you know, when people refer to trauma as big T's and little T's, and it's all different for everyone. And I'm not saying that mine are all big T's. Some of them can be little. I think we just have to be careful with that. And I know that there are listeners out there who have gone through some serious situations, maybe even more than myself, for sure, who left ministry altogether because of the hurt and the wounds, and others that hide behind the pain of this for years, and they suffer, and then they deal with burnout, and then they're wrestling with depression. And so I'm thankful that there is hope when we find our life in a ministry transition that's difficult. I also think that it's important, and one thing that I truly want to do is be cognizant or think of other parties involved that are afflicted or affected by church conflict. Like, that's why I use the term casually, church casualties, because it involves so many different people. And it seems to me like some of these situations, they become just lose-lose situations. And but the bottom line is, we are all responsible to God for our actions, and we'll give an account for that. With some of that being the case, I wanted to let you know I'm not going to necessarily focus on names and places, and
sure.
And my effort is to protect the innocent, the wounded, even those who may have done wrong, or I may have thought they've done wrong, or they may have thought I've done wrong. I get that. One, I think, realization to add on top of that is not all who bring harm are wolves. Early on, I used to think that person is a wolf. They could just be another wounded person that is in this terrible cycle of wounding others. And so I think we have to be careful. And of course, there could be a genuine wolf, but we need to tread carefully with that.
Yeah, I heard one pastor on here. He said, people are not as often against you as they are just for themselves, you know, like not treating them as so adversarial. But yeah, dive into those stories for us. Talk to us about some of those experiences that you mentioned. You know, you call them trauma events, whether big T or little T. Let's hear some of those.
Yeah, let me describe a couple of them. The first event is very early in youth ministry. Everything was going amazing. It was just fresh out of Bible college, and church life was great. You know the setting there as well. And the pastor I served under, he served for many years, and he made a surprise transition. I was surprised by it. The church was surprised by it. However, I stayed put during that transition. And I was single at the moment, but engaged to Dinah. And so the church was going through that process of searching for a new pastor. And there was actually a lot of excitement. It wasn't really a bad experience. There was excitement. Sometimes when a pastor leaves, there's a lot of stress and anxiety, but people were excited. And so a new pastor came in with his young family. And right from the beginning, as he was in the interview process, I found out later, he wanted to see me as the youth pastor to get a raise, a small raise, and I appreciated that. I was primarily dependent on income from outside the church in those early years, and that's kind of the story a lot of times over the years, and I really appreciated the gesture and everything. And what was interesting, about 6 months into that transition of the new pastor being there, just 9 days before Dinah and I were getting married, pastor, he sat down with me and he said these words: "It's not God's will for you to be here." And that came as a total shock. It was like a surprise. It was like a sniper shot out of nowhere. What unexpected. And I simply explained to him that I was confused by his statement, and I didn't really see it that way. But because Dinah and I were excited to serve together, we've been talking about that for 2 years, and so I chose not to argue the point, and I simply went home and I proceeded to call Dinah. And my next call following that was to our state youth director, and I simply expressed what transpired that hour ago. And I went with the intention of saying, hey, do you know of any openings for us in ministry? Sure. We're getting married in 9 days. We have all these plans and everything has just changed dramatically. And his response was to me, don't make any quick decisions and you're going to hear back from me. So I did that. And about an hour or so later, and this is the day before texting and all of those things.
Right. So my, just phone calls phone rang.
That, yeah, my phone rang that was on the wall, and the pastor wanted to see me. So I arrived at his office and I sat down in an armchair in front of his desk, and he came around the desk, and this man was 6 foot plus. Well, he stood over me and he firmly clamped his really large hands around my forearms, and he held me down in the armchair, and he literally hollered at me about questioning his authority for the next 20 minutes. It was a blur. I was very uncomfortable, to say the least. My heart actually in that moment just sunk. And I knew that all the youth ministry aspirations and dreams for that community, it just like they drained out of me. And so then fast forward a few weeks later, and Dinah and I married, and we returned quietly to just start packing up our bags and our belongings. And we were definitely feeling the pressure. I actually had one other meeting with the pastor and the church board, and that was really, really heart-wrenching. Those leaders, they had questions. It was a moment of a lot of tears that were shed.
Sure.
And they were faithful, dedicated people. And I purposely didn't address the actions of pastor. I was confidential and quiet because he was expressing what he believed was God's direction. And I wasn't going to argue with that. So that Sunday, I stood before the church and was reading my resignation letter, and the pastor, he stood next to me, and he actually clutched my clavicle and he just squeezed it painfully. He was controlling, and I knew clearly that the ministry relationship would not work. I knew it was over. And so our honeymoon was kind of interesting. You know, we had all these plans and ideas, and but I did call the pastor who transitioned a few months, 6 months ago or so, and they actually had an opening. It wasn't planned, but they had an opening. And so that was a very welcome transition for us because it became a great blessing in our lives. It was healing for us, even as we proceeded forward in ministry. And I think the thing that breaks my heart, seeing some of the other side of it, is the church that we left, it went through major challenges for multiple years, sure. A lot of turnover. As that pastor was somewhat or intimidating and controlling, he left after a short period of time. Mm. And tragically, in the years to follow, his marriage fell apart and he left the ministry altogether. And I'm certain it left a wake of trauma for their family as well.
Oof. Yeah, no, that's really heavy. Gosh. It is sad, and obviously why we're talking about this today is because we want to see these situations improved, have better outcomes and better things. But keep walking us through your experience. Tell us more of kind of the story, because again, what I've noticed about topics like this is the passion for it is not often born from these good seasons. It's born from these seasons of pain. And so walk us through some of the other transitions you've experienced.
Yeah, well, the second trauma event I'd describe is after many, many years of associate ministry and youth pastoring, I made that step to lead pastoring, something that I wanted to do for decades, you know, and so it went forward. And the church that I was serving in was growing numerically. It was just a really exciting thing happening. The foundation was being just built really well with great committed believers. And I wasn't new to the church. I had served there for multiple years as first as a volunteer, not even a paid staff member. And it was a great part. I was I've primarily been bivocational in ministry after all these years, still am to this day. And we had a term, it was called the X plan, and it was discussed among church leaders, pastor, he brought it forward, and for several years, and even among church people, they understood this. It was meaning that I was going to swap roles as he was transitioning out. And so after several months after pastor's resignation, only two resumes came in. One was mine, and another was another individual from another state. And he actually didn't qualify by bylaws. He wasn't Assemblies of God pastor. And so the church leadership decided to proceed with my candidacy. I think maybe use that term today. That was the term.
Yeah, no,
then.
Candidacy makes sense. Yeah, you're still candidating in churches, you know.
Yeah, pastoral search. And so what was interesting during this time period, there was some rumbling that was developing among a couple new families that were very new to the church, new to the area. And it started some church division in a short amount of time. And so, of course, you go through that pastoral candidacy and you have this special church business meeting. And it was totally different than the atmosphere in the church service we just had together, where we're singing praises to Jesus. And it turned more into, kind of divulged into some upheaval. It wasn't one of those great church meetings. And then there became some personal attacks against myself and the former pastor and some of the leaders. And ironically, I look back at it, and one of the songs in the worship set was Enemies Camp. You remember
that
one? Oh,
no. Yeah. Gosh, what an ironic thing. Jeez.
Yeah. And so it was kind of an ugly battle that was taking place. And in the words of our area presbyter, his words were afterwards, that vote was totally of the flesh. Mm. He said it was simple. And what occurred for just a couple weeks prior, two men went to all kinds of families in the church, and they were sowing discord and creating lies and spreading accusations. And the vote came down 16 in favor and 18 not in favor. And what happened there, we actually had a large group of people that weren't even members. They were non-members. Mm. And they were in favor of my pastoral candidacy. And what happened instantly is families left. They just left. Yeah. And both sides of the aisle. And it wasn't pretty. So we had a seasoned ministry couple come in that the network worked with us. And I stepped down as the worship leader, and I just stuck to roles of youth ministry and associate things, office administrative type things.
Sure.
And during that time, by some advice from the network leaders, our family, my wife and I, we decided to look into other possibilities. And we had some openings in another state, was Nebraska, some of the ties to Dwight and Nadine. And so what we just did is we prayerfully waited, and we stayed in communication with the network leaders and our interim pastor. And so several months later, it was probably three, the church board and the network leaders decided to appoint me as the pastor. Mm-hmm. So then four families left, and the couple families that were creating most of the headaches, they made it known that they were unhappy as they left that day. That, believe me, they made it known loud and walked away in anger. And then it just continued to spread more noise throughout the community. And that first year of my lead pastor role was challenging. Our church finances, a small church, it went from $120,000 in a budget or annual income, and it got cut right in half.
Wow. That's devastating.
Yeah. I mean, and it was a growing church where we were making all this headway, and then we hit that brick wall.
Mm.
And again, trauma occurred for all kinds of families in this on all sides of the, if you want to say, argument.
Sure.
But it wasn't our brightest hour. But we shortly started to rebound in that year. We were seeing new believers come to Christ, and we actually had an associate come in. He was fresh out of Bible college, newly married himself, and I was trying to be very sensitive to them, and we were moving forward. So we were kind of turning the page, and then that turns into the third event that I would describe that was difficult. Just as we were gaining all this new ground, one undercurrent came along unexpectedly, and it just started to develop or fester. And so pastoring is always interesting. Pastoring families, pastoring your own families can be very, it comes with some different challenges, if I could say that.
Sure.
Because all of us, we have different preferences or direction on how to lead. And being that my former pastors were my parents, it just became a little bit complicated. And so with some of the change, and I tried to implement some change slow, I was taught to do that. Don't do it too fast. And so I was just starting to cast some vision and assessing some of the ministry programs. We revamped some policies because of the ugly church fight. We addressed some things there. And we did that with some network leaders to help us and styles of governance. And of course, we had to make some updates to the facility. And I think what added to the mix that made it more challenging is I had some family members that started to deal with issues like PTSD, a severe depression, some attempted suicide and divorce. And there was multiple things like that. And these are all individuals I love dearly. And so what it did is it took that trauma spectrum, and it, I would say it jumped exponentially.
Sure.
And so to honestly keep some of the details to a minimum, the dysfunction of the church in the past, it turned inward towards some serious family dysfunction. Mm. And at one stage, as pastor, I lost confidence of some of those closest to me.
Man.
And I tried to lead gracefully. I tried to stand on biblical principles, but it became quite a mess. Aspects of the difficult church transition a couple years ago just actually weren't healing. It seems like they just transferred, and our family dynamic or relationships began to crumble. And then what was difficult is it led back to church relationships that were strained. People were pulled into some of these situations. At one point, that young associate pastor, he and his wife, they left. Long-term church leaders were drawn into some of this, and it was quite a conflict, and created a lot of collateral damage. The thing I found was interesting is unfounded accusations and strange innuendos, and a lot of this was huge amounts of misunderstanding that became directly or indirectly from my family. And so to describe it, messy doesn't really fit the word well.
Sure.
It was a difficult hour for everybody. And I say that for everybody. I was someone who just 3 years before was struggling with being rejected by a large portion of a church family. And I was still in the healing of that. However, when I was rejected by some of my own family members, it was gut-wrenching. Personally, I felt like Joseph in a deep, dark pit. Believe me, Joe, I wanted to run away. I wanted to run away, but as a pastor, I just continued to be committed. And so those three events are part of our story, just part of our story. I think the biggest and most the single event that turned the tide for me personally was when my predecessor, my father, he sat down with me and he said, "Bill, you're a good pastor and you could lead differently, and I'm sorry." Mm. And I'm telling you, my heart received that affirmation like a sponge. It was healing salve for my soul was wounded. I was wounded deeply. And the thing about forgiveness, it takes time. We can't control all the dynamics of that in other people's lives.
Sure.
And, but forgiveness is possible, and I'm thankful for that. And for years, there was a period of 3 to 4 years, I really wanted to run away. And at times of stress, I would actually scour the internet and I would look for new job ministry opportunities, but I couldn't muster the strength to do that. I didn't feel confident. I was beat up and weary. At some point I did eventually apply and I had several interviews, and then I would make it to the final stages and then the door wouldn't be open. So God, he closed those doors, and I learned the practice of just simply being faithful. And so I'm thankful for that. And so if there's others out there that if you're facing some kind of difficult ministry transition, don't give up. Be faithful. Don't give up, because God sees us in our pain. He sees it from all of the sides as well. And I'm thankful for that. He sees it unbiased. And but it's important to reach out for help and begin the healing journey, because it's worth it. It's worth it. And I'm thankful for that as I've grown and healed.
Yeah. Well, let's, man, first of all, thank you for setting the stage with such candidness and honesty. It can be hard to dive into. Even seasons of hurt that we feel have been healed, it's still a lot to kind of work through. And so, hey, everybody. From all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say thanks for tuning in to part one of today's episode. We have heard Pastor Bill kind of set the table for our conversation. I'm sure that many among our listeners kind of empathize with some of these traumatic events, some of the things and the blows that we all take in ministry. And so I just hope that after this first half, you kind of feel seen in the various things that you have walked through. And I'm super excited for part two. So please tune back in next week, because we're going to start to draw a roadmap of how do we walk out of these seasons of hurt? How do we navigate these transitionary things well? And I am excited for all the nuggets of wisdom that Pastor Bill is going to share. And so again, our goal every week is that we'd be speaking into your situation as people who understand what you're going through. I would hope that you'd be encouraged, empowered, inspired. If you are feeling inclined, you can check us out on Spotify or Apple Music or Apple Podcast, or on our website, ruraladvancement.com, or you can just spread the word. Let somebody else know that there's great conversations being had about rural, and kind of invite them to dive into the story alongside you. And so for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Bill Lannis, and we will see you for part two next week.